Thank you very much, Cheryl. And looks like a quiet day in the sanctuary today. I think this happens sometimes in December. I think people start to wind down or something, and then in January it kicks back in again. But it's good to see those of you who are here today. And we are here for the guiding light. And we are reading from NTI 1 Corinthians chapter 3 today. Last week we looked at NTI 1 Corinthians chapter 2. And we talked about the thoughts that are echoes. Do you remember I rang the bell, and after you ring the bell, it echoes? So like, you know, maybe we're using our mind for something. And it could actually be, you know, something neutral. Very, very neutral, like paying bills. But even while we're doing something very, very neutral, like paying bills, there could be judgments that are going on in the mind about how there's not enough money or wow, look how rich I am. I'm so lucky, or, you know, whatever they are. And then what happens when we're no longer paying the bills and we move to something very, very neutral, like, you know, brushing teeth or taking a shower, the mind kind of echoes those judgments that we had while we were using the mind. We're not using the mind now. We don't really need to use the mind at all to take a shower. We know how to do that. We don't need to use the mind at all to brush our teeth. We know how to do that. So it's kind of running on autopilot, and it's echoing the content of the judgments that were there when we were using the mind. And this is a wonderful opportunity to notice what we do with the mind is really what this is. We can look at the mind and we can see, you know, is it worrying about how much money I have? Is it all puffed up thinking I'm better than everyone else? You know, what's happening in this mind? And that helps us to see the type of thinking that we do when we're using the mind. Now, what I did this past week is I did pay attention to those echoes. And I observed what was being echoed. I noticed it without judgment, just with pure awareness. And then I forgot about it. By that I mean I let it go. Because as you guys know, my spiritual aspiration is to forget everything, be the spontaneous moment and nothing else. And so I would apply my spiritual aspiration, and I would then just forget. I mean, by that I mean just let go of whatever the mind was echoing. But I would notice it first. I would be aware of it first. Pay attention to it first. Let it into that healing awareness. And then let it go. One thing I want to say is that at an earlier time on my spiritual path, I often could not let thoughts go quite so easily as I can now. So, for example, let me use the money example. You know, maybe I had been paying bills and watching the, you know, subtracting from the balance in the checkbook. So watching the balance go down. And there was a time, of course, when I wasn't making any money at all. And it was very, very frightening to me to watch that balance go down. And so while I was doing it, there were all kinds of thoughts, fearful thoughts. And then the echo later, when I'm, you know, cleaning the shower or taking a shower or something like that, the echo was all about the financial fear. And at that time, I couldn't, in the way I could now, I couldn't just be aware of the thoughts and then forget about it. And the reason for that is because the thoughts had very, very deep roots. If you think of weeds, you know, especially here, I don't know what weeds are like where you live, but here in Colorado in the desert, and we have some very hardy weeds. And there are some weeds when you go out there and you try to just pull the weed, you pull and pull and pull. I put my full body weight into it, and you can't actually pull that weed. Now, there are other weeds that are more shallow, and those weeds are pretty easy just to pull, right? But there are some weeds, I mean, I'll just like pull with both hands and all my body weight, and I can't. And so what you have to do if you want to get rid of those weeds is you actually have to kind of dig around them. You have to expose more and more of the root system, and when you get dug down deep enough, then you can pull the weed. And so if you can't just genuinely forget about something, and again, we're not talking about repressing anything. We are never, ever talking about repressing anything because that's just not helpful. But if you notice an echo, and let's say there's some financial fear or some judgments of some type in the echo, and you attempt to just let it go, see it as just an echo, be grateful that you're aware of what you're thinking when you're thinking, and then let it go, and you can't, right? You can't. That's because this is a thought that has those deep, deep, deep roots. And that's a time when you need to dig down around it in order to release it. And the way that I teach dig down around it is by using root cause inquiry. However, again, Byron Katie has a nice dig down around it process. She calls it the work. Diedrich Woolsack has a nice, neat dig down around it process. It's called choose again. And if you listen to Tess Hughes, for example, when she's being interviewed by Jacqueline Eckert in the Awakening Together Satsang, or even when she's being interviewed by, I think it's Conscious TV, Tess talks about the inquiry that she used to practice. You know, why am I, doing this? What's behind this? And just kind of in a very informal way, she inquired into things and dug down around those roots. So be aware that if you can just let something go, very genuinely, you see it, you realize, that it's not the type of thinking that you really want to take part in, and you just bring it to the light of awareness and let it go, and it goes, it's a shallow weed, that's great. That's great. But if you can't let it go, if it seems like, it's really got a hold on you, then that's when you need to move into the inquiry and look at it a little deeper. There isn't a single wrong-minded thought that can't be let go, just like there isn't a single weed that can't be pulled out of the garden. Some of them just take more effort than others, right? And the good news is, when we really let go of a particular belief, it's gone forever. It's just gone completely. It's a weed that doesn't grow back. So with that review of last week, I would like to go ahead and play a song. And again, because we are in the heart of the Christmas season right now, I enjoy playing songs from my Christmas playlist, because I only play songs from this playlist 1 month out of the year. And I'm going to play a song called That's Christmas to Me, but in this case, it is sung by Pentatonix. So here we go.
The fireplace is burning bright, shining all on me. I see the presents underneath the good old Christmas tree. And I wait on light till Santa comes to wake me from my dreams. Oh, why? 'Cause that's Christmas to me. I see the children play outside like angels in the snow. Well, Mom and Daddy share a kiss under the mistletoe. And we'll cherish all these simple things wherever we may be. Oh, why? 'Cause that's Christmas to me. I've got this Christmas song in my heart. Christmas tree. Oh, why? 'Cause that's Christmas to me. Oh, why? 'Cause that's Christmas to me.
I listen for the third of reindeer walking on the roof. As I fall asleep to lullabies, the morning's coming soon.
The only gift I'll ever need. Join your family. Oh, why? 'Cause that's Christmas to me. I've got this Christmas song in my heart. I've got the candles glowing in the dark. Hanging all the stockings by the Christmas tree. Oh, why? 'Cause that's Christmas to me. That's Christmas to me. Ooh. cause that's Christmas to me.
I got this Christmas song in my heart.
I've got the candles glowing in the dark. And then for years to come, we'll always know one thing. That's the love that Christmas can bring.
Oh, why?
Cause that's Christmas to me.
Right. Yeah. I see Cheryl says, nice song. And yeah, I love that song. I love pentatonics. And Carrie has listed another type of forgiveness process, which again helps us to dig around those roots of those deeper weeds. Radical forgiveness process or radical forgiveness worksheets. And that's not one I'm familiar with, but maybe some of the people within earshot are. So, yeah, so there's different processes out there that are very, very helpful. And sometimes that's what we need is an inquiry process, right? Okay, so today we are going to begin NTI 1 Corinthians chapter 3, which starts on page 289. Remember that the ego is still in your mind and be aware of it. In that way, you may remember to set that self aside and open up to the true self. And again, if we did the practice that goes along with NTI 1 Corinthians chapter 2, where we were watching the echo this week, I'm sure that we saw that that ego is still alive. I mean, I know I did. I'm assuming that probably everyone, again, within earshot did. There was definitely some ego in that echo. I was able to easily ignore the ego, easily forget the ego. But to say that the echo was egoless would just be denial. There was definitely ego in the echo. And by the way, Carrie is saying that the radical forgiveness process is Colin Tipping. Colin Tipping. So again, remember that the ego is still in your mind and be aware of it. In that way, you may remember to set that self aside and open up to the true self. Practice will seem necessary before you are ready to set yourself aside and not pick it back up again. Do not worry. I will give you your opportunities to practice as you are willing. So be willing to set yourself aside. As much as you are willing, I will give you circumstances for practice. What's really interesting about this particular paragraph is that, stuff happens, right? Stuff happens all of the time. Whether the stuff that happens is used for the purpose of letting go of ego or not really does depend on our willingness or our focus on that particular purpose. So, I don't have a lot of upsets anymore, so I have to take a moment and used to when I used to teach, because I've been doing this for, 11 years now, I think? 11 and a half years. So used to when I used to teach, I was actually just going through something, or I had just had an upset yesterday, and I could very easily, talk about my own experience of the upset and how whatever I was teaching applied to that, how I used that, but in a very genuine way, because I did practice these teachings for so long and so consistently, I don't really have these upsets anymore. Stuff happens, and I just deal with what happens, but I don't actually see it as a problem. I don't see it as an upset. It's just, going through life, and therefore it also doesn't stick in the mind. Events come and go, right? Events come and events go, and they do not stick in the mind. So now I feel like when I'm teaching, I need to make stuff up. I need to make stuff up. So I'm going to make something up. I'm going to make something up. All right. I got a story. You can help me, Kathy. One of the things that I've been working on lately is I am working on plans for the India pilgrimage, finalizing plans for the India pilgrimage. And we're working with a tour company there for part of the trip. And the very first tour company that we picked out, there were a couple things about that tour company that were a little suspicious. And I'm not saying that they were a scam tour company, because I don't know that for a fact. I would have had to go all the way through and be scammed before I knew that. But there were a couple things that were a little suspicious. One was their name was Chennai Travel and Tours. But there are two Chennai Travel and Tours. And this one, the website name was Chennai Travel and Tours with two S's at the end. And I thought, well, maybe that's just because there happened to be two companies with the same name and they had to add an S. But at first, you know, that little extra S at the end made me wonder a little bit. But I ignored that and I continued working with them. And when the time came to pay the deposit, the method of paying the deposit was a bank wire. Now, that also is not unusual in working with people in India. In India, credit cards are seldom used. Very seldom. So I didn't think anything about the bank wire until I went and looked at the name on the account. And usually the name on the account would be either the owner of the business or the name of the business, like Chennai Travel and Tours. And instead, the name was a code, just some numbers and digits. It was a code. And I thought, oh, that's very unusual. You know, I've done this kind of thing for years, work with, you know, China, India, Israel. You know, I've wired money many times, Africa. Never seen a code for the account name. This is very unusual. And so I started looking online to see if I could find anything that proved that they were legitimate. And I didn't find anything that proved that they were legitimate. So I did write to them and ask them if they had anything that could prove that they were legitimate. And their response was just that they were a startup company and you know, they weren't registered yet. And you know, and that may very well be true. But of course, I then stopped, did not do business with them, and I switched and found a travel agency in India that, based on TripAdvisor reviews, is very, very trustworthy and very, very good. But let's pretend, now that I've told you that whole long story, let's pretend. Okay, let's pretend that for some reason I wasn't cautious when I saw that account name that really wasn't a name at all, that was a code. And, you know, based on my friendly emails with these people, because they were very friendly, of course, based on my friendly emails with these people, I went ahead and sent the money for the tour. And then, you know, we get to Chennai in February, and on the morning that we're expecting the tour to come and pick us up, we're all down in the lobby of the hotel, and no tour. Right? There's no tour. Nobody shows up, because let's pretend that it was a scam group, right? Okay, so what NTI First Corinthians is saying about this is that if I am willing, this situation, which could be extremely upsetting, right? It could be extremely upsetting because I have collected money from, you know, 15 other travelers. They trusted me to put together a tour. Now there's no tour. I probably have to give them back the money, which means I'm now out the money, you know, myself, right? There's no tour. You know, this could be a very upsetting. It could be embarrassing. It could be, you know, all that unworthiness and I am bad stuff could come up. I could, you know, I could become prejudiced and not trust Indians anymore. Yeah, it would make me look incompetent. I could become prejudiced and not trust Indians anymore, right? Just, I don't trust Indian businesses anymore. All kinds of stuff could happen. Or I could use it for my healing. That's what this paragraph in NTI 1 Corinthians chapter 3 is saying. If I am willing, absolutely willing, everything that happens has only one purpose, and that purpose is for my healing. Right? And this is the way that I lived my life for many years. I did have what I perceived to be disastrous situations arise. And what I chose to do when these disastrous situations arose was to journal, to find false beliefs that I needed to let go of, to give my willingness to let go of those false beliefs, and practicing rest, accept, and trust. And then if there was something else that needed to be done, like in this case, I may have to get the money and pay everyone back, do that too. You know, I may have to apologize, do that too. You know, but that stuff was peripheral. What was most important was I saw the situation as here for one purpose. This happened for one purpose, to help me awaken. You know, there's a new age practice, and I think it's even practiced within our spirituality, which I don't consider exactly the same as new age, but I think that this new age idea seeps into our spirituality. And the idea is something like, what did you do to attract this? Right? What did you do to attract this? And, you know, looked at with the right mind, that could still be useful maybe, and I'll come back and talk about that in a moment. But what happens often when people practice this, what did you do to attract this? What accidentally happens is that they actually reinforce false beliefs. For example, you know, one way that people sometimes look at it is, there must be someone that I was unfair to. And now this is happening to me. And yeah, Kathy has nailed it, guilt. So when I look to find out who was I unfair to, oh yeah, I remember in my life I did such and such. I didn't invite so and so to my birthday party in sixth grade. I invited everybody else and I didn't invite her. And, you know, this is my payback. What that does is that reinforces the false belief of guilt. So looking at it in that way is not at all helpful. Another thing that people may come up with when they ask questions like, what did I do to attract this? You know, is that maybe, you know, maybe I didn't give as much attention to this trip as I thought I should have. I was very busy. I was trying to do things the easy way. And because I was trying to take a shortcut, this is what happened. Again, my guilt is reemphasized. So that way of looking at things, what did you do to attract this? I don't think that that's completely helpful. The only way that such a question would be completely helpful is if the question was, you know, what false beliefs attracted this, and that might be a little bit helpful. But I think that what Holy Spirit is saying here is cleaner than even that. Holy Spirit is saying here that everything that happens in your life is a gift, period. You don't have to worry about what did I do to attract this. Everything that happens in your life is a gift. And the purpose of the gift is to help you awaken. There's no guilt in that. There's only receiving in that. There's only receiving the gift. And so this is exactly the perspective that I had as I was going through my purification period. All these different things happened, you know, like you guys have heard the story about Laurent rejecting me and Laurent spending all of my money and, you know, different things that happened along the way. And to me, I never asked the question, what did I do to attract this? Never once. I did ask the question, what is this gift bringing up? What is this gift from the universe bringing up in me that I can look at, see through, and let go of in order to awaken? And that process always felt much, much cleaner to me. So again, practice will seem necessary, meaning that when things do come up in us, when a situation does happen and there's embarrassment, there's frustration, there's guilt, there's anger, there's blame, right? What we need to do is turn to practice. In fact, I would say if there is anything other than peace, joy, love in a very natural way, then we need to turn to practice. You know, it's also very popular these days for people to say you don't need to practice. I don't see how that's even possible to transcend your current state of mind if you don't practice. Now, maybe it depends on what the word practice means. Like, maybe you don't need to meditate 3 hours a day, you know. But I think that when you become upset, you do need to look to see what is upsetting you, what thought is upsetting you. Is this a shallow weed? Is this a deep weed? Do you need to do some inquiry? Is there an old belief here that you've been believing for a long time that you need to let go of? Are there emotions here that you're tempted to repress, and so you need to practice rest, accept, and trust and allow these emotions to arise? Is your mind telling you that you need to control this, you need to change this, you need to fix this in a way that you know is wrong-minded, and so you need to breathe and do nothing? To me, these things are all practices. And so what we are being told here is that the universe will give us gifts. And a way I would word that is just that stuff does happen. Stuff happens. Even when you are cleared of all of your false beliefs, stuff will still happen. The difference is when stuff happens after you're cleared of your false beliefs, there genuinely is no upset. The peace, joy, and love continues. But when you are not cleared of your false beliefs, there is an upset. So the upset is the indication that you do need to practice now. This is a gift in this present moment to help you awaken. And you can tell by how you feel that it's a useful gift, right? So make use of it. Make use of it. Make it about healing. So continuing on page 289, walk with me, and of course this me is the Holy Spirit, walk with me in your desire to practice, and I shall walk with you. According to your willingness, you shall be given opportunities to practice, as everything that is done for you and by your willingness. Your willingness to practice will match with your brother's willingness to learn, so he may be brought to you and you will be given your opportunity to practice. In this way, everyone is given by me according to his willingness, and the light that reaches into the mind is received through the mind's own willingness to receive it. So one thing that's very interesting, and this fits very well with Michael Langford's teachings, you know, it may feel a little victim-like, and it may lead to distrust of divinity if we say things like, Holy Spirit is giving you that gift. You know, like, Holy Spirit is giving you the gift of an India scam that you fell for, right? It sounds like, gosh, you know, that's not very nice of Holy Spirit. But what this paragraph says is that it is your willingness. It is your willingness that is doing this. Listen to this sentence. According to your willingness, you shall be given opportunities to practice, as everything that is done for you and by your willingness. And this is what Michael Langford teaches too, that intense desire for liberation will bring you everything you need. And this is saying the same thing. Your willingness is going to bring you everything you need. And a part of what you need, whether you like it or not, you know, medicine doesn't always taste good. A part of what you need is situations that's going to push up in you that which needs to be healed. You can't heal if that stuff stays repressed. So a part of what you need are these situations. But then what this says is it's even more perfectly orchestrated than that. You know, so let's go back to my made-up story about we're in India and I accidentally fell for a scam tour company and now there's no tour, right? And now, you know, I'm going to have to give everybody back their money and I'm going to be out those hundreds of dollars that the tour cost, right? Well, what this is saying also is that those other 15 sets of eyes that are standing around while I am dealing with this, you know, urgent situation, you know, the situation that's upon me now. These other 15 sets of eyes are there because they need to learn. I have the willingness to use the situation to heal. They need to see somebody be with the situation in that way. They need to witness that. They need to see somebody not, you know, picking up the phone and screaming and yelling. And I don't know who I'd scream and yell at with a scam. Maybe the police, calling the police and screaming and yelling and starting to distrust Indians and showing lots of fear because I don't have the money. Could you please not make me pay you back because I can't be out all this money? They need to see somebody that's not going into all that right wrong-mindedness. They are there. They are the witnesses of this situation because it's helpful to them to watch me go through it with healing. So these situations, and not only that, you know, well, I just saw something on TV. Again, it's another made-up situation, but I just saw a situation on TV where apparently a woman was taking a long time at a checkout line in the grocery store because she was doing lots and lots of coupons. She thinks of herself as the coupon queen. And the man behind her was getting very frustrated about how long it was taking. And I suppose some words probably went back and forth between them. The news didn't show all that, but you can imagine that happened. Because what the news showed was what appeared to be, as she went to leave, she has a soda with her. She takes her soda and dumps it on him. Like she's furious at him and she just, you know, dumps it at him. And he then gets angry at her and he takes her and beats her head against the shopping cart. So what if I'm the woman? What if I'm the woman and for some reason I have all of these coupons and the man behind me is getting very, very angry and is saying all kinds of things and I realize within myself, okay, I don't really need to save these dollars. This is too upsetting to my brother. I will just put the coupons away, apologize to him, pay, and leave. Well, the reason that he was there, saying whatever he was saying to me was A, to push up in me anything that needed to be pushed up to be looked at, but B, so he could see me respond that way. So he could see somebody respond with a right mind instead of the wrong mind. This is saying that every single circumstance is orchestrated in such a perfect way because we have different levels of willingness right now. So the one that is most willing may be given the big healing opportunity, but the ones who give that big healing opportunity or the ones who are there to witness that big healing opportunity are there. They may not be ready for such a big healing opportunity yet, but they are ready to witness it. That's their level of willingness. The lady working at the cash register too. She would be another one. She would witness this. She would be ready to see this. So everything is so incredibly perfectly orchestrated that everybody is getting what they need out of the situation based on their current level of willingness for healing and to learn about the right mind, right? To learn there is another way. Another great story, and I know some of you have seen this, is Peaceful Warrior. And in Peaceful Warrior, there's that scene where Socrates and Dan Millman are in an alley and they get robbed. And Dan Millman knows that, you know, Socrates could beat the crap out of these people, right? And also he's a pretty strong guy. He could help. But instead, Socrates, you know, gives them what they asked for and then says, wait a minute. What about our watches? Do you want our watches too? And wait a minute. You know, you look like you're about a size, you know, 10. Would you like my jacket? And, you know, and gives away everything. And they end up in only their underwear walking away. And Dan Millman's like, why did you do that? You could beat the crap out of them. Well, Socrates didn't need a healing at this point. He was already enlightened. But Dan Millman needed to see Socrates act that way. And those three men that were robbing them needed to see Socrates act that way. You see, the situation was brought together for the healing of everyone involved. And again, different levels of healing. Maybe the ones robbing them weren't ready to look at, you know, their self-hatred being pushed up. You know, but they were ready to see someone respond in peace. And that's why they were there robbing, right? They were there robbing in order to see Socrates respond in peace. So, as we give our willingness to healing, everything that we need is brought to us, but also every person in the situation is brought to the situation too because of their need for healing. It's just incredibly perfect. So continuing on page 289, your willingness is also the measure of your joy. For in willingness, you serve your true desire. In resistance, you deny it. To lay yourself aside is to give willingness to let go of false illusion. To cling to yourself and your thoughts and your fears is to cling to illusion and to hold on to what you do not want. So what this is saying is that there is joy in willingness and there is suffering in resistance. Joy and willingness and suffering and resistance. Now, let's go back to my made-up story about being scammed by a tour company in India and now standing there with all of these people and no tour, right? All right. So in this imaginary situation, I might not be feeling a lot of joy. You know, if my mind is not healed, I'm probably not feeling a lot of joy. But I might have the willingness to see this as a healing opportunity for me. In that thought, there is going to be, relatively speaking, comfort. There's going to be comfort in the thought that this is here to help me awaken. And that comfort would be lacking if I was not looking at the situation with my willingness, if I was just looking at my situation with resistance, this should not have happened, right? This should not have happened. They ripped me off. Those dang Indians, you can't ever trust them, blah, 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 blah. There's going to be no comfort, you see? And that comfort is joy. That bit of comfort is a bit of joy in the situation. So my willingness brings joy. My willingness brings comfort. My willingness brings a way of looking at it that at least reduces the suffering. Now, the suffering would be reduced completely. The suffering would disappear if I had no resistance at all. That's the way that the healed mind would look at the situation. The healed mind would have no resistance at all. It would be like, okay, this is what has happened now. You know, okay, and here is where we are at. So now what do we do? You know, and just handle it without any upset. So if there's any upset at all, it means there is some resistance there. And resistance being, this should not have happened. That's like the basic thought. This should not have happened, or another basic thought, I'm the king loser of the world, right? Something like that is there. That's resistance. But if I bring willingness to the situation, even though I'm resisting it, there is going to be less suffering, more comfort, more hope, more usefulness. Even usefulness feels better than just getting completely run over by the universe. This situation has a usefulness to it. And we can tell how much willingness we're bringing to the situation by how much joy in one flavor or another there is. We can also tell how much resistance we're bringing to a situation by how much suffering there is. And in my experience, I went through a period of several years, I think 5 years, where there was a mixture of resistance and willingness. And it seems like when it really first started, there was 51% willingness and 49% resistance. And so even though I was willing to see that this situation was for my healing, and I was willing to look at it that way, a lot of suffering too, right? Because it was only a 51-49 mathematical balance. But that 51 got me going. And as I moved forward, the willingness increased. And as the willingness increased, the resistance naturally decreased so that I began to be able to face situations with more and more joy, more and more acceptance, more and more, you know, of those more positive types of emotions instead of the negative. So if you're in a situation and there's a whole lot of suffering, but yet you are willing to look and see, it's possible you're at that 51-49 split. But if you pay attention to the willingness and you go ahead and use the situation, even though there's a lot of suffering, and you just keep doing that, that willingness factor increases. And your healing will continue, but it becomes more and more joyous. The only reason that you suffer ever is because of resistance to the situation. Right? If you have 100% willingness, you would have zero resistance. And you would have zero suffering. And remember, you're not guilty for your resistance, because the ego will try and tell you that. You're not guilty. You're just not. This is just what is right now. And looking at it and being aware that it's the resistance that's making you suffer is very helpful. You know, one thing the ego likes to say is that, and you know, I've heard many people tell me this, and I'm really sorry that this belief is in the mind, but it is, that Holy Spirit is making me suffer. You know, like there's this idea that Holy Spirit is bringing this situation to me. Holy Spirit is making me suffer, and I have to suffer in order to heal. That's not true. Your willingness is bringing the situation to you. Your resistance is causing the suffering. So, NTI 1 Corinthians chapter 3 continues. Release yourself to your joy. Now that sentence could say release yourself to your willingness. Because the more you release yourself to the willingness, the more joys there are going to be, whether it's in the form of comfort, hope, usefulness, right? But the more joy there's going to be. So release yourself to your joy. Give to your true self by laying your false self aside. In this way, you will remember more of that which you want, and your willingness to give of yourself will grow. Let me just have a drink real quick. So again, let's imagine you're at that 49-51 split. You have a 51% willingness and 49% resistance. And that's a really painful place to be. I've been there, so I know what it's like. It's a really painful place to be. But what this paragraph is saying is, in spite of that pain at that 51-49 split, if you will go with your willingness, use the situation to look at what's upsetting you, practice rest, accept, and trust, avoid the temptation to blame, right? All of that kind of stuff. Again, your willingness will increase. And you all know this. You know that what you give attention to increases. So when you're at that 51-49 split and you give attention to your willingness increases. And in fact, that's how you got to the 51-49 split. The 51-49 split is the beginning of the end of resistance, although it's still a very painful place to be. But once upon a time, every one of us was at a lesser degree of willingness. You know, maybe at one point we were at, 10% willingness, like we got down on our knees and prayed to God when something really, really bad happened, but 90% of the time we were in resistance. But by giving attention to even that 10% when it came up for us, it grew. It grew. And now we've gotten to this place where at 51-49, and it's funny because 51-49, at least in my experience, is even more painful than when it was only 10% willing and 90% resistance. And I think that's because you see the split more. You know what the joy of willingness feels like, and so the pain of resistance seems harder. So that 51-49 split is really a very painful place to be. Yeah, it's more acute, Meg is saying. But it's progress. In spite of the increased pain, it's progress to get to that point. So you just keep giving the attention to the willingness. And as you give the attention to the willingness, it continues to grow, continues to grow, continues to grow. And pretty soon, you know, you're up to 90% willingness and 10% resistance, and there's not much pain there at all. There's a little contraction, right? You'll feel a little contraction at things. You'll feel a few seconds of pain. But then you're able to look at it very quickly with your willingness and take care of it very, very quickly. So the willingness grows by you giving attention to the willingness, by you practicing with the willingness when these situations arise that are here for your healing. All right, so starting at the bottom of page 289 to continue with the reading. Remember your true self as I have taught it to you. You are eternal and beyond limits of any kind. And then notice your awareness as it seems to be to you. If you do not know yourself as limitless and beyond all fear, you maintain a belief that you are what you are not. Therefore, do not take off in your way, as your way is still illusion. Follow my way, that you may be led from illusion. So what this is saying, which is really, really clear, is if you do not know yourself at all times, and I mean really know yourself, not just intellectually, yada, 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 but know yourself as completely limitless and beyond all fear, then you could still fall for the ego at any point, is what this is saying. If you do not know yourself as completely limitless and beyond all fear, then at any point you can still fall for the ego. You are still susceptible to the ego. And this, again, this I think is probably true for every one of us here. I mean, I don't know myself as limitless and beyond all fear. You know, there's been a great increase in that willingness. You know, there's a lot of joy. Situations are handled easily. But know myself as limitless and beyond all fear, that still feels like a stretch. Not as much of a stretch as it once was. But I still feel like there's something to realize there. Which means, just like NTI 1 Corinthians has been saying, the ego is still here. Because the only reason we don't know ourselves as limitless and beyond all fear is because of that belief, that ego belief, that belief that I am a person, that belief that I am the separate self, that belief that I am the me, right? So that belief is still there. There may be great willingness. There may be much less resistance. There may be incredible joy, peace, the ability to be with situations as they arise. But if I do not know myself as completely limitless and beyond all fear, the ego is still there. And so what this is saying is that we need to be very, very careful and remain in a surrendered way of being, a checking within with intuition instead of running with our mind. Because our mind, that is the domain of the ego. The mind is the domain of the ego. And so if I start running with my mind, I am running with the ego again. I need to keep this surrendered position of checking with intuition, being the very humble, I don't know, I have to ask within type of person. I have to feel, I don't know myself. You have to stay in that very humble position until you know yourself as completely limitless and beyond all fear. So that means that every one of us, as far as I know, we need to be very humble, very tuned in, and be the servant of intuition rather than going with the thinking of the thinking mind. Otherwise, we're running with the ego. This also says, this is the last paragraph, then when you know no more limits upon you, you shall also know what is limitless, which means that you have again learned to remember yourself. This doesn't say a thing in that last paragraph about then we'll go back to the thinking mind. Then it's okay to go back to the thinking mind. It doesn't say that. I mean, listen to these words very carefully. Then, when you know no more limits upon you, you shall also know what is limitless, which means that you have again learned to remember yourself. It says you will be self-realized. It doesn't say, and now that you're self-realized, you can just do whatever your head says. Right? So at any point, that we run back to the head, run back to the mind. We are running back to the ego. Now, what this paragraph might imply is that there is no more ego. You know, we hear about this thing called the ego death. This paragraph might be implying there is no more ego to run back to. So when we're completely limitless, the ego is also completely gone, and therefore we realize who we are and we abide in that very easily, right? Very naturally, because there's no more interference. But some people get the idea that somehow I'm going to become enlightened, and then whatever I think, you know, whatever my mind says is okay because I'm enlightened and I don't need to, be surrendered anymore, you know, because now I'm enlightened. What NTI seems to be saying to me is, as long as that mind is there to go back to, you aren't enlightened, and you do need to remain the humble servant of intuition. You do need to remain surrendered. You do need to be checking, how does this feel? Is this feeling like a yes? Is this feeling like a no? Right? Very inward focused. And that is the end of NTI 1 Corinthians chapter 3. And I don't think I want to start NTI 1 Corinthians chapter 4. I think it feels like a good idea to just do one chapter and then kind of spend a week letting that kind of rest with us. So let's look at this NTI 1 Corinthians chapter 3. A whole lot of what it talked about was, again, that balance of willingness and resistance. So I suppose that one thing we could really pay attention to this week, if something should happen to come up that that pushes something up in us, is we could just pay attention to whatever suffering is there, whatever level of suffering is there, whether it's a small contraction, a small annoyance, a small frustration, or a big suffering. Pay attention to whatever kind of suffering is there and remind yourself, this is my resistance. That what's causing the suffering is my resistance to the situation. And just notice it in that way. This is my resistance. Again, whether it's a little bitty in the chest, you know, when somebody says something, you feel this, that's my resistance to the situation. Or whether it's this big, blown up, you know, oh my God, disaster, upset thing, that's my resistance to the situation. And then after acknowledging the resistance, look for the willingness. How can I bring willingness to this? Where can I be willing? What am I willing to do right now? What am I willing to think right now that is right-minded? For example, rest, accept, and trust is a right-minded thought. You know, breathe and let this go is a right-minded thought. Go in the bedroom and journal. You need to do some root cause inquiry is a right-minded thought. So where can I bring willingness to this situation of resistance? And again, no matter how small the suffering, there's resistance there. And the way that you move towards awakening or complete freedom is by giving attention to willingness. So even if it's the smallest little upset, don't ignore it just because it's tiny. This is an opportunity. This is one of those situations that your willingness has brought to you, and this is an opportunity to give more attention to willingness and to get more healing. Right? That's what this is, even if it's very, very small. And not only that, but anybody who happens to be around witnessing it in any way, they're there to learn from you. You know, you're the one with the willingness in the situation. You're the one that has the ability to shift from resistance to willingness. But they're there to watch you shift from resistance to willingness. And so when you do this, when you shift from resistance to willingness in whatever way that you do, you're not doing it just for you. Right? This isn't a thing that it's not just about you. It's never just about you. You know, this is something that you're doing ultimately for everyone, but also especially for those who are there watching. This is a gift you are giving to yourself and to the whole, when you choose to give your attention to the willingness, bring willingness to the situation, any situation at all that has any level of suffering at all. So I'm going to play another Christmas song. This song is by a group of men called Straight No Chaser, and the Christmas song is What Child Is This? Yeah, Straight No Chaser are bar terms. So it's a very cute name for this band, don't you think? All right, so releasing the mic, and I will be back here at 7 p.m. Eastern Time because Cheryl is going to interview me today, right? So I'll see you guys then. Bye.